Jeff Ogilvie survives Wingfoot.
Now the moment Aaron Bradley has waited.
Gary Webb is the five-time Australian Open champion.
Golf at its best by one of the best in golf, Peter Thompson.
Standing in front of a crowd like this today and win the PGA Championship is pretty special.
He's done it at last. Greg Norman.
Gets his name on the Stonehaven Cup.
Leishman to 11 under. Now we've got a new leader, kids.
Here it is, Adam Scott. A life changer. Coming up next, you have unrestricted access to golf across Australia and the world. Thanks to Golf Australia, we're going inside the ropes. Subscribe now on iTunes or your favourite podcast app, or head to golf.org.au.
G'day everybody, welcome to the show. It is Inside the Ropes, episode number 45. Lovely to be here, great to have your company. Mark Hayes joins us. We'll say g'day to the third banana in a moment. But Hazy, you're well.
I'm exceptionally well, Murray. Thank you.
I think we need to apologise. Just right off the top,
yeah,
let's apologise to a few people who had trouble hearing the great Mike Sheehan.
Well, a lot of people had trouble hearing Mike Sheehan.
Where's Mike Sheehan coming from?
Well, he's a keen golfer. We should get him on one day.
Not a very good one. Mike Clayton on last week's show, which was such a pity because he had some very caustic things to say.
He did. Some people could hear it and some people couldn't.
I heard it fine.
We can't figure that out, but we humbly apologise, and I've given Clates a couple of uppercuts, and his mic technique will be vastly superior when next he returns.
And have you ridden our very special, not a guest because she's a regular on the show, Jo Charlton, on her microphone technique coming in? You have absolutely given her the sixth degree on how to use a microphone. Jo Charlton, lovely to see you.
Yeah, I have got the 101 about 5 minutes ago, so we'll see how we go.
Are you nervous? We haven't given you information overload on how to speak into a microphone, have we?
Well, I'm clearly keen as mustard because I rocked up yesterday anticipating that we were doing this podcast yesterday, and you can't be penalised for being late, but I'm here again.
Well done. Well
and
done.
It's great to be with you both.
That's exceptional from you because I swore to Jo yesterday, Andy, that if she didn't fess up, she would get the gears the entire time.
No, well, you're better off owning this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
When you make it blue, like, and it's not a blue, it's enthusiasm.
Commitment.
To the nth degree, and we applaud you for that.
Well, the truth is, like, it's been 18 episodes since I've been with you guys, so
right.
I was keen as mustard, and I'm just glad to be with you, beauty.
And a lot has happened in your world since then. Your personal, that we're going to delve too much into the private lives of the people who bring you inside the ropes, but there's been a significant shift in your universe since we were last here together.
Yeah, I'm now married.
Well done, Jo.
Hey.
My parents have their first grand puppy, which they're very excited about. And I'm 6 feet under in my MBA at the moment, but everything's ticking along well.
Nicely. How's the golf going? Not.
Infrequent.
Eight wipes I had on Saturday, Hazy. Eight wipes.
Wow.
That hurts. That's a new PB for me.
That's a solid number.
Eight wipes.
Par, Stableford?
Stableford.
That was my question too earlier.
And Jo said, par, and I said Stableford, and she said, oh, that's a bit more forgiving. And then I looked at her and I said, Jo, I just told you I had eight wipes. It wasn't that forgiving.
So I trust you broke 20.
I did break 20. I didn't. Not that I put the card in. You know, some cards you just don't, no matter how bad, how good it might be in terms of getting out, and God knows I need an extra shot or two right now, but some numbers you just do not want as part of your permanent record, and I do not want that as part of my permanent record.
When you punch that in on the GA website, you punch in your thing to find your handicap, and you see something that says you played to 73 handicap, that's probably not a good idea.
I just said to the...
I was about to say, surely you had to pay a fine for that in the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah.
There was no going in.
The clubhouse.
The walk of shame.
Yeah, I spoke to Chris Lee, one of the guys marking my car, said, what do you have up on 18, Andy? I said, give me the card, Chris. I don't care about what I did. I actually had 6-for-1, but I don't care. I just give me the card. No one's seeing it. Big show today. Cam, speaking of blokes, fortunately, he didn't have any wipes. Cam Davis, what a story, this young man. He's going to join us on the show. If you don't mind, Ernie Els is going to, in a roundabout way, be part of the show today. You've caught up with him on an international teleconference, and he's spoken about a few key issues of interest to many of us who listen to this show.
Yeah, we often talk about putting and techniques and the long putter especially, so he talks about that. He had a nice little chat about Adam Scott, which is very informative, and also on a matter that's dear to my heart, Andy, about the World Golf Championships.
Yes, emphasising the word.
World.
Kristen Hilton's going to join us as well. Now, I know this is something we're all very invested in around
Absolutely.
Here, right in your wheelhouse, Jo, but Equal Opportunity Human Rights Commissioner for Victoria. And, you know, the GA Vision 2025 document was put out early this year, the gender policy that Golf Australia put out last year. So many intersecting conversations around sport that are finding their moments of coming together in this area at the moment. Equality, inclusion. It's a big time in the world of pro and amateur sport. And I'm very keen to see how sport and golf can play a role for her office. It'll be a fascinating chat.
It will be. It's about creating opportunities for everyone. It's fair. It's relevant. It's about how our sport can remain relevant in society. And it's a great conversation starter for clubs, this one.
Couldn't agree with you more.
And just overnight, Andy, we're recording this on Wednesday, the RNA launched in London, the Women in Golf Charter, which is binding a lot of countries to a lot of actions, which is fantastic. And we'll talk to Kristen about that.
Action is the key word, and we will, but just action is the key. People can say, oh, give it time. Give it time and this will happen.
No.
It does need time, but it needs action more than time. People have just got to say, nah, the imbalance is wrong. It's been wrong because it's been set up by the patriarchy. The world's changed. We need to make the change happen. And there'll be some old blokes driving to their golf today going, listen to this, you know, tosser. That's not happening in my world. Well, mate, it is going to happen in your world, and it needs to happen. And for the good, on so many reasons, on so many layers and so many platforms, it needs to happen, or the thing's not going
to
grow.
One thing to that bloke, if he doesn't act, his son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter won't be able to enjoy what he enjoys right now.
Spot on.
And there's nothing more simple could be said about it than that.
Spot on. So we'll talk about all of that. So let's let the women of Australian golf be the lead item this week. And why wouldn't we? We've been talking about Minji Lee.
Yeah.
Knocking on the door for 2 months, I reckon, Hazy and Joe, since you've been here last. And there's always a potential, I reckon, for great runs of form, not necessarily to have their payoff. And, you know, there's going to be bigger days in Minji Lee's life, hopefully major championship days where she puts it all together for four rounds. But she got her payoff. She got her payoff in the Volvic in a big way. And it was nothing other than what she deserved, I reckon, at the end of this great run of form that she's been producing.
You could barely have said it better. I mean, and sometimes some unrequited golfing love is very painful, but as you say, she had a little cuddle on Monday morning our time. And six top seven finishes this season already after she left a runner-up in Canberra on the ALPG Tour.
That's right, yeah.
And a win at the Oates Vic Open. I mean, it is a staggering year already. And she's third, I think, on the race to the CME Globe.
Yeah, third or fourth.
Fourth, maybe.
Yeah, but she's definitely, yeah, obviously skyrocketing, a steep rise for Minji. You talk about her six top tens.
If Joe's voice just got a little bit louder, it's because Hazy goes, Joe.
Come closer. No, but she consistently across the board in her entire career to date, she's played 92 events and only missed 9 cuts.
Yeah.
Say that again.
92 events and 9 cuts she's missed.
That's staggering.
It is staggering.
That's heading towards Tiger Woods sort of numbers.
So
you know, we marvelled at Tiger Woods for doing exactly that.
Yeah,
Didn't miss a cut forever. The average player misses cuts on a far more frequent rate than that. That is an extraordinary number you brought to the table there, Joe.
And she, I think we've been somewhat expecting this, haven't we? We've been a little bit critical over there. When is she going to win? When is it going to happen? It's been a couple of years now. She won 3 times before she was 20. And finally, you know, she's got the reward that she deserves.
On her birthday.
On her birthday, yes. Happy birthday, Minji.
22. This is the other thing. In the consciousness of people like you two, Minji Lee has been around for six or seven years, like at the pointy end of your consciousness. She's 22. Now, there is a pattern in a lot of, you know, female players around the globe that they do enter the fray young-ish, and then maybe kind of by the time they get to about their late 20s or 30, they start to find the desire to continue to go. Maybe other things come into their lives that they want to pursue personally or, you know, professionally. So the next 5 to 6 years for Minji Lee, not presupposing to know anything about what's going to happen in her world thereafter, but they're going to be, these are the years now. Now that she's established herself, she's back top 10 in the world, she's back in that esteemed company now. The way she won this tournament, makes that bogey on 17, which was a tough hole, and then comes out up 18, rock solid four on the par five. I mean, she had to lay up, and her chip was perfect. The putt was great. She did everything she had to do to just validate in her own mind that I don't have to be a runner-up all the time. I don't have to have top five finishes. I don't have to top 10 finishes. I can actually win again, and she's done it. She's as good as any player out there, I reckon, Minji Lee.
And one of the better things about it, and it's actually not uncommon in the LPGA Tour parlance, that the chasing pack often contains a major winner or two, because they've been so disparate in their sort of dissemination around the world. So IK Kim and Stacey Lewis, both women's British Open champions, both run, you know, have her in the sights, and she's as cool as the other side of the pillow, Andy. She's magnificent. I was so happy to see her win. Her second shot to 18, I think she asked for it to get lucky, but, you know, I don't think she really needed to. But the way she iced it, it's just pure, Joe. It reminds me of you and your heyday.
Oh, goodness, no. I was lucky enough to go and enjoy playing with the likes of Minji and Sue, who we probably should also mention.
I will mention her.
Tied fourth. Yeah. But I was never in their league. But thank you very much, Hazy.
So Sue, her turnaround in the last four or five starts now, Joe, and we've been commenting on it on the show on a weekly basis, has been spectacular, really, given the run of missed cuts that she had to endure before that. The levels of confidence she must be taken by a recent run of form must be extraordinary.
Yeah, she's in a really happy place. I've been texting Sue on and off over the last couple of weeks, and she'll say that exactly. She's looking forward to coming home. She is coming home in July, but she is in a really, really happy place, and it's good timing with the US Open leading into the US Open now next week, or this week, rather.
This week.
Yeah.
And just before we go too much further, and it's a name we've becoming more familiar with on this podcast, if nowhere else yet, Karis Davidson, another top 10 finish in Japan.
Yeah.
Into the top 174th, I think she is, into the top 200 in the world. Again, just after 6 months of being a professional golfer, in the 174th position in the world on an obscure tour.
Which asks some, as we spoke to Stace about a few weeks ago, asks some unique questions of...
Yeah.
So the cultural pressures and the discomfort that might bring. But Karis is an awfully mature young lady, a bit like Greeny. We've got some wonderful role models out there at the moment in the women's game, and it's great to see them sort of shining a light.
It's good stuff. Speaking about young Australians soaring up world golf ranking charts at the moment, we're going to spend a bit of time. I know Maddie Cutler and Hazy caught up with Cam Davis before the recording of this podcast, such at the time, differences around the world and the pressures that we're all under to make things match up every now and again. We couldn't have Cam live on the show, but Matty Cutler and Hazy have caught up with him. We'll play the entire interview shortly. But we have to lead off with him. He has to be part of the first segment, just as a chat between us. This kid's 105 in the world now. He's got to 105 in a dead set heartbeat. I mean, how's that happened?
And he's having a party without a card. Until this week, he hasn't had a card. He's locked up his web.com tour
card now.
But before that, he was relying on getting starts and, you know, sponsors invites and Monday qualifying, and can he get a go here, can he get a go there? It's a big, big move for a young guy, not halfway through his second year as a pro yet.
So... stop me I'm sure you probably have this as part of the long run. I haven't heard the entire interview yet, but in terms of getting starts, not knowing the uncertainty, you flagged this last week on the show about some of the miscommunication between player and event organisers, and the fact that you can think you're in sometimes, but you're not quite sure. And these are the little things that a young man needs to overcome, and he's got a good man in his corner who is helping him just negotiate his way through the maze of, you know, professional golf at the moment.
He really is, and it's a name familiar to a lot of people in Australian golf on all different levels. He's been a great caddy on the women's tour, in particular in Korea, but more noted as a pro in his own right, Andrew Shuden. And the two have struck up just this magnificent relationship. And, you know, Cam's just a lovely, lovely young man. as is Shoots, except not the young bit. Sorry, Shoots. I can't be rolling with young for you anymore, mate. But the two of them have a really healthy bond. And what Shoots is bringing to the table is really starting to help Cam, because Cam has made mention before of how hard it is to go and play a course for the first time. And it's a big disadvantage, especially without a card. You don't know whether you're going to be able to play next week, to learn the nuances of a course. And Shoots has played a lot of these things. And he's just saying, keep it out of that bunker there. Don't go right here. Lay back off this tee. Attack here. And it's really, it's clicking for Cam and sky's the limit here. And I'll let the rest of the interview tell the tale, Andy, but it's all coming up trumps for him at the moment. He'll tell you about a story where he basically didn't have his ducks in a row in terms of playing a tournament. He wasn't sure of the process on the web.com tour and how he's gone about taking advantage of that situation that presented itself a couple of weeks ago. It was actually really insightful for both him and Andrew Shuden.
How vital is it to have somebody by your side when you're away from home and out of your natural comfort zone who can just be someone to help you get through those tricky little moments?
A friend, yeah, I think. Yeah, a friend, yeah. A mentor, but also that experience that you speak of develops that trust that you need when you're out there, and that level of calmness. I think Cam has that innately anyway. I think he's a very level-headed man. I went over to and play a little bit of golf with him over in St Andrews as an amateur, and he was so different to the rest of the boys on and off the course. He held himself at a level of maturity that was very, very, very noticeable, and I think that's a great asset that's probably, in a turbulent time in navigating his way through the maze that you talk about, Mari, there's no real surprise as to why and how he's got there.
Perfectly put, Joe.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And in this level of maturity that she refers to, he's slightly more mature than me, about 2.5 decades.
Well, that wouldn't take much. But you're about to grow up. We'll talk about that before the finally. We'll talk about that before the show's done. 65 in the final round. Fantastic stuff. It's awesome.
You wait till you hear him talk. I'm sorry to preempt.
Can he play the guitar? Did he reveal with you whether he actually knows how to play guitar?
No, he didn't talk about the guitar.
Well, because he got the guitar.
I saw the Nashville trophy.
Why didn't you ask him about whether he can play guitar? I thought that would have been your first question.
I'm just not that nimble of mind, Andy.
Oh, dearie me.
But he's the sort of bloke who would pick it up and be playing Stairway to Heaven in about 2 weeks, I reckon.
Right.
But wait to hear how he talks his way through the back nine. It's unbelievable.
Look forward to it. That's coming up soon. European Tour, Wentworth. Looked like Rory's to lose at the halfway mark, and lo and behold, lose it. He did. Shoot 70-71. No match for Francesco Molinari, 66-68. That puts Molinari well and truly in the running now for Ryder Cup selection, fourth on the Euro points list. The Australians had a horrible time. Absolutely. They're about 8 or 9 teed it up. Only one made the cut.
Andrew Doak.
Yeah, so boys, lift. We've been singing the praises of the number of Australians over in Europe and how good it is, Joe, to see so many Australian flags back
across
on the European
globe.
Tour.
But yeah, particularly with Dimi and Herbie now as well. Yeah.
Because they've been turning their back on Europe, sadly, for the last kind of decade. The Australian numbers over in Europe have been kind of dwindling, like, such as the focus in America. But it wasn't a great weekend for us there. Likewise, over on the PGA Tour, Justin Rose bolts in 66-64, 66-64. Made a mess of it, didn't he, really? And they came at him. Brooks kept it, threw 31 at him on the front nine on Sunday. Rose beat him by a shot on the front nine. That's just unfair if you're doing that sort of stuff.
The reasonable day's golf to go and watch, and your mate, Kevin Na, went even better.
He did. 61 he had on the last day.
And rude, a couple of misses, he said.
And I did see an interview with him with his little kid sitting on his knee after the round. Pretty hard not to enjoy the Kevin Na personality. I just wish he played his golf a bit quicker than he does, that's all. So Scotty doesn't get himself into the top 60, which is what he needed to do.
No, and we'll talk about that with Ernie Els later, but he's apparently in good form, but he was so far down the track until the Sunday, it didn't really, was going to be inconsequential. And he slid from 61 to 65. Mm. He's got 2 weeks to go, obviously, until the Open, but the next cutoff is June 11. So if he doesn't do something this week, I'm not even sure if he's entered this week. I assume he's playing.
He did say he was going to play, didn't he? He kept saying, I'll keep playing until I get in.
Okay, so if he's at the Memorial, which I haven't checked, and I apologise, I'm imagining he's going to need somewhere like a top 20 finish to sort of get up into the realm where he doesn't have to worry about it.
Well, he takes good thoughts in, 64 in the final round, jumped 25 places in the last round. Great to see John Senden back making a cut. He finished tied for 77. And over in Asia, Mizuno Classic Open Qualifier, that's on the Open. Yep. Is that on the Open Qualifier? It is, yep. Brendan Jones, super close.
Well,
again,
this is like finishing fourth in an Olympic event, Andy. You know, people only remember the medalists. Mm. And poor old Brendan is on the wrong side of four players who advanced to Carnoustie. Mm. He's finished fifth. So fifth and fourth, normally maybe a few dollars, obviously, Joe. But, you know, the agony of not getting a start in a major is much more telling, I would imagine.
Horrible. That's what we play the game for.
To get into
particularly
those.
These boys and girls.
Minwoo Lee, Matt Griffin, both finishing in the top 30 alongside Brendan Jones. The winner was the only player under par. One under one. It's like, we clearly don't get to see any of it, but it must have been either an unbelievably difficult setup or terribly difficult conditions.
We need to go on a campaign to watch these Japanese men's and women's tours. We need to get on this. I'm going to have to get onto some of the Japanese media.
Well, you two have both got significant influence. Can you make it happen? Please? Yeah.
Joe has. I'm just a plotter.
Adam Blythe finishes second in the Asian Pacific Classic over on the Asian Tour. Which is noteworthy as well. And we should, as we do the global wrap of all things Australian golf and Australians playing golf around the world, mention that.
These things have been getting pretty long lately.
They have.
The results are unbelievable.
They
really send credit to everyone around the world because it obviously gives us stuff to talk to, but it's starting to catch the attention of people who questioned the golden era, Andy. They questioned it.
Well, they may have just questioned a little bit too early, Hazy. We're going to break out of the way. Cam Davis to join us next.
Hi, I'm Minji Lee, and I'm proud to be an ambassador for MyGolf, Australian Golf's national junior program. One of my favourite things about coming back to Australia is seeing all the kids getting into golf. MyGolf is every Aussie kid's first step on their golfing pathway. It's all about fun and friendship, learning golf and life skills in a safe and healthy environment. So, if your child is between 5 and 12 years old, be sure to find a program near you at mygolf.org.au.
G'day, I'm Greg Chalmers. I'm a long way from home here in Dallas, Texas, but I love catching up with all the Aussie golf news on Inside the Ropes.
Welcome back to Inside the Ropes, and I'm joined by a regular contributor to the panel for a very special guest we've got. I couldn't keep Matt Cutler away, the High Performance Manager of Golf Australia. It's a toss-up, actually, between who's excited about our next guest more, Matt. Is it going to be you or me?
No, we're both excited, Hazy, and why not?
Wow. On Monday morning, just a fabulous morning, as we've already mentioned, for Australian Golf Sunday, of course, in the United States. Some were glued to Minji Lee and some were glued to Cam Davis. And it's with great delight, absolute sheer delight, that we welcome Cam Davis, the winner of the Nashville Open, which sounds so good to be able to say that. Cam, welcome to Inside the Ropes.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Cam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Doesn't sound like fame and celebrity sort of gone to your head too early, Cam.
No, I mean, straight back to work, really. I've had to hop on an early flight this morning, get on over here to Ohio and straight into the next one. So I didn't really get too much time to kind of sit back and soak it all up because, yeah, if anything, this week's a much bigger event and a lot more going on. So I've got to try and conserve myself as well as I can because It's going to be an interesting and tough week.
So just for those who aren't aware of what you're talking about at the moment, you've obviously had one of the biggest weeks of your career, but as you rightly say, it's potentially even bigger this week. You've moved straight on. We're talking to you in Columbus, Ohio. You're there for the Memorial Tournament this weekend. It's as big as what last week was and as important as it's going to be to you in the coming months and years. This is a massive opportunity for you this week in Ohio, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's just a great opportunity just to play this golf course. First of all, I've seen it on TV over the years, and to actually be able to see it in person is one great thing, but also being able to play it and be able to play in the tournament's another. And I mean, obviously playing pretty well at the moment, it'd be a big deal if I could go and have a really good week again this week and get myself up the top of the leaderboard somewhere, but it's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of patience because this course is pretty brutal, actually. So yeah, as good as last week was, I need to get straight back to work and straight back to focusing on things that I did to get myself a win last week, because I'm going to need it all for this week, for sure.
So your memories of that course in Columbus, is that from the President's Cup or just watching the tour events normally?
Everything I've really played there over the last few years, it's been televised. I can remember quite a few of the holes. I can remember some famous shots being hit out there, and I haven't seen the whole course yet, but being able to stand out there and see those holes in person is really cool, yeah.
Because it seems to me, mate, that's a course that should suit your game, just on face value, from what I can recall of the course. It sort of sets up well for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're driving the ball well and you're driving the ball relatively long, it opens it up quite nicely. The thing is, the fairways are generous enough, but as soon as you miss the fairway, the rough is so brutal out here. It's like, I don't even know how many inches deep it is, but the ball pretty much disappears down there and you can't get much more than an 8-iron out of it. And, yeah, if you're missing the fairways all day, it's going to be very difficult to make pars, let alone shoot something around even par for the day. So it's going to be one of those weeks where, you know, if the driver's going straight, then you actually have quite a few opportunities. But, it's going to take a lot of patience. You're going to probably end up in some bad spots, and it's going to be near impossible to get near the hole or up and down or get anywhere near the pin. But, you know, everyone's going to be facing that as well. So, if I hit the ball like I did last week and stay nice and patient and hole as many putts as I did as well, then you never know. It could be another really good week. And, I mean, that's what I'm trying to make happen. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, let's hope so, Cam. Talking about last week, 67, 71, 67 and a 65, 18 under. But I want to go to that back nine on Sunday where you, I think you were nine back with nine to play and made five birdies on that back nine and birdied the last two. And we were lucky enough to talk to you briefly yesterday just after you finished and you told us how you played those last two. Can you can you talk us all through it, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, to give myself any sort of opportunity, I need to play the front nine pretty well. And it was a very difficult nine. And being able to play that under par, I knew I was making up some sort of ground. But the back nine was really there for the taking. There's quite a few reachable par fives, and the par fours were relatively short and gettable. But, I kind of knew I was somewhere around the lead with a couple of holes to go. And, you know, 17 set up pretty perfectly. I had the same distance earlier in the day, so I knew what club to pull. And he was up there pretty close to the hole, and when I got up to the green, I saw that, you know, my 10th footer for birdie was actually to the tie for the lead. And in my mind, I thought the leaders had a few more holes to go, and I was at least going to need a couple of birdies to even be close to a playoff in my head. So I thought that was definitely a must make. But I got back to my processes and went through my routines and knocked that one in, which was really nice. It was nice to hole a nice putt under pressure like that, but they're still going to the last hole thinking might need eagle to win this tournament or get into a playoff. I just really didn't know what it was going to take, so just kind of committed to giving it the best go I possibly could, and I hit a great drive and had an opportunity to knock it on in two, but hit a little bit heavier with my second shot, but it ended up in the perfect spot to be able to get up and down and chip in a putt. I thought 18 under was going to be touch and go whether or not it was going to hold up, because, you know, the other leaders still had the par 5 18 to go at least and another couple of shorter holes to go. So I was just waiting around. Actually, it was a very similar situation to the Australian Open last year. Just pretty much set itself up the exact same way. Had a few guys coming down a stretch line needing a birdie to tie it up or to get in front. And, you know, I just sat in the range and waited to hear some good or bad news. Whichever one was coming, I was ready for it. And fortunately enough for me, they came over and told me that I'd won. So that was pretty much how that last little period of time played out.
It's not a bad habit to get into, sitting on the range waiting for a possible playoff and then being told you've made the had the win. So you're being modest, though. Yesterday you said on that 18th tee your address felt perfect and you just thought you'd smoke it. So more honesty, please, Cam. I want more of that, please.
I don't know. I just stood over the ball, and it's one of those moments when, yeah, the grip feels right. You know, the club sat behind the ball perfectly, and just everything looked perfect. And you know, took the club back. Everything was still feeling really good, so I thought, might as well give it a bit of a hit and, yeah, hit the ball out in the middle of the club face and then went a fair way down there.
It was
a great feeling under pressure to be able to make a swing like that and see the ball going where you're looking.
Do you feel bulletproof when you stand there and that you have that magical moment that you just described? Do you feel bulletproof, like you could not possibly miss this shot?
Yeah, I've had that moment before and it didn't go where I was looking. it's not guaranteed to go straight, even if you get that feeling. But it happened when it was important, and that was the main thing for me, to know that I could hit a really good shot like that and make a confident swing when the pressure was on. So that's definitely something I'm going to be taking going forward, and probably going to hold me in very good stead for this week, because I'm going to need a whole bunch of drives exactly like that one if I'm going to be able to be up there on the leaderboard, especially come Sunday. Because, yeah, these tee shots are very intimidating out here, and you know, the more drives I can hit straight down the fairway, the better, that's for sure.
Cam, you brought up the Australian Open, and some people just say what you just said then, you know, like it'll give me good memories going forward or whatever, and it can be true, but it can also be a bit of lip service to an interview. I get the feeling that that's not for you, that you actually recalled things that happened at the Australian in November, from presumably a bit earlier, but definitely by the 12th hole onwards, where you canned that magnificent eagle. From that moment on, I'm imagining everything that went through your mind came up when you were making a similar sort of run on Sunday your time.
Well, it actually played out quite differently, because at the Australian Open, every time I looked at the leaderboard, it was never on the top page, so I actually never knew where I was. And for all I knew, the leaders were going just as well as I was, and you know, I still felt like there was no pressure on me because I didn't know that I was anywhere near the lead. I felt like coming down the final stretch of holes, I might have, you know, needed a birdie or something to kind of creep a little bit higher up the leaderboard and get into the top five. But winning the tournament was never in my head. I was just really glad I had a great finish and topped off a great round with a birdie in the last. And only really realised after I'd walked into the scorer's hut and saw the leaderboard. This week was a different story in that I knew where I stood and I was still able to put it out of my mind and keep making good swings. So it was a big improvement, a little bit of personal growth for me to be able to stand the situation this time round, knowing the situation, knowing that I still had to make a couple of birdies if I wanted a chance to win, and knowing coming down the last hole, if I made birdie here, I could be a chance for a playoff or something, and to be able to make a bunch of great swings and make a couple of really good putts at key moments is, you know, that means a lot to me, and definitely take a lot of things from the Australian Open to be able to play a great round of golf just in a big tournament like that, but to go in this week and, you know, hit those shots with a lot of pressure on me is a big deal as well. So they've both got good things going for them. I'm going to use them both as much as I can in the future.
My word. So Cam, you've got the Memorial this week, which we've touched on, and you've got the Open Championship in July, which obviously is very exciting and something that prior to this, you would have worked your year around, I'm sure. You're currently 14th on the web.com money list with the top 25 getting a card. What are your plans for the next little bit of the year now that you've had this win in Nashville?
Well, obviously this week, and I've got US Open qualifying on Monday. I've still got my fingers crossed for that. A good week there. Could, you know, another major could be on the doorstep, which would be fantastic. I'd love to go out to Shinnecock. My caddy Andrew's actually played in the US Open there before, so I feel like I've got a little bit of local knowledge if I manage to get into that one. But I'm not going to be able to play all the web.com events from now until the end of the season. I'm going to need to miss a few in the lead up to the Open Championship because I want to give myself the best possible chance to have a great week there. And I'm going to miss one this week and next week as well, so I'm not going to have that many events, but I'll still probably have around six more to go, and I know if I have one or two decent finishes in those last six events, it will be able to put me right at the top somewhere on the money list where, you know, fingers crossed I'm finishing the top 25, that would be fantastic, but even top 75 gives me those last four playoff events, and I know one good finish in those last four as well will lead to good things. So I feel like, you know, regardless of how things play out from now on in, I've got plenty of golf to look forward to, which definitely wasn't the case about a month ago. I was kind of struggling to figure out what I was actually going to be able to play in over the following weeks, and the only solid tournament actually in the schedule was the British Open. Other than that, I didn't really have anything on the horizon, but all of a sudden now I've got a pretty full schedule, so I'll be able to play a lot of golf, and you know, I'm still going to have plenty of opportunities to, you know, get myself up that web.com money list, because all of a sudden, yeah, that top 25 is well within reach, and still going to give that as much of a good go as I can.
So, Cam, just on that, if you were presented with an opportunity, say, to play a regular US PGA Tour event, not a major championship, that's a different kettle of fish, obviously, but, you know, a regular tour event post the Open Championship, would you forego a start or two starts or whatever on the web.com tour to play that, or would you focus in on maintaining your top 25 status on the web?
I really don't know how well I could answer that right now. If I have one more really good web.com finish between now and then, I think I've got a little bit more freedom to make decisions like that. But at this point in time, I still need to make the most of the web.com tournaments that I can actually, you know, definitely play in at this point in time. So as of right now, I'd probably forego a PGA Tour event and focus on the web, because I know that's the pathway to being able to play a whole lot more PGA Tour events next year.
Good answer, Cam. Great answer.
Yeah. Rather than playing one this year, yeah, I'd much rather get a PGA Tour card and be able to play a whole lot of them next year.
You're a smart man.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, things have changed dramatically after last week in terms of my schedule, and, you know, being able to have a place to play for the next couple of years is fantastic. But, yeah, you never know. One more really good finish on the web might be enough to open up a couple more opportunities like that.
Well, I want to talk to you about, you know, how the opportunities have opened up for you on the web before this Nashville success, because you've come from nowhere. But first, and this is, I've been waiting for this, Cam, for 6 or 7 months now, because I haven't had the chance to get in a room or in a studio with you and Matt Cutler together, because you've played your first US PGA Tour tournament at Mayakoba, which is where, of course, you were the low individual at the World Amateur Teams Championship and helped lead Australia to a magnificent Eisenhower Cup victory a couple of years ago. Can you just walk me through how Matt scored that week? Because I've seen him in a lot of photos when the trophy was presented. He's in a lot of photos, so I assume he was part of the four-man team. Is that correct?
Next.
He was definitely part of the team. We wouldn't have done it without him.
Yeah. He's blushing, Cam, which is exactly the thing I needed to get achieved there. But
that's what I was after.
Yeah, no, well done. So I wanted, the serious bit of that was you did get a start at Mayakoba as a result of that, and you did really well for yourself, 15th, I think, from memory. You know, very close to earning yourself another immediate start straight away. Did you feel straight at home on the PGA Tour, and is that likely to happen this week, or is it because it was Mayakoba and you were sort of familiar with the territory?
Well, I think being very familiar with the golf course and having played really well on the golf course before makes a big difference. But to toss up between that and the tournament where I've never seen the golf course before that week and I haven't had experience playing a tournament there, I think it's a big advantage. And I really feel like, I was playing well to start off with in that little stretch of time in the lead up to Mayakoba. And yeah, the course familiarity definitely helped as well. I had a lot of good memories from that place, and a lot of the tough tee shots that would normally probably have irked me a little bit, I would have been a little bit uncomfortable on them, I'd only ever seen myself hit good shots on them. So that all worked together and led to a really good week. And it was also the first week that I had Andrew, my caddy, on the bag as well. And you know, it was a good experience to have someone who, you know, kind of mapped the course so well, got to know the golf course so well. There was no guessing on club selections, wind, anything like that. We had everything under control, and you know, it was the first time I'd really, really experienced that at that level. And I think it all just worked together to lead me into playing a really good tournament. But yeah, definitely seeing a golf course beforehand is a big advantage. And if I do end up playing the web.com tour next year, I think it'll be an advantage again playing these courses and these tournaments again for a second time, because you kind of know where you need to go. Your practice rounds aren't spent so much in trying to figure out what to do. It's more just, it's just getting a feel for the course again. You already know what clubs you're hitting. You already know where the greens break and all that sort of stuff, the wind directions, how far the ball goes. And that all plays a key part in how comfortable you feel by the time you've done the first two on Thursday.
So, Cam, when you came out of the qualifying school for web.com this year, it was T113, I think you were, in the Q school. Your status was very limited. You've played well in the first couple of events you did get your teeth into, but I want to ask you about how you translated those into that start that has spiraled into this beautiful sequence. But also, I'm not 100% sure of the details, but I understand you had a bit of a hiccup going to one event because you thought you'd pre-qualified and you hadn't, and rolled up a little bit late. Can you walk us through that?
So that one event. So there's a commitment process that you need to go through. You need to let the tournament know that you plan on playing. And yeah, there was just a little bit of a mix-up. I knew I'd finished top 25 the week before. That gives you an automatic start. And yeah, I think we just had a little bit of a mix-up. I thought I was straight into the event, but I had to let them know that I planned on playing first. And
right.
So I missed the deadline on that. And when I turned up, they were just like, sorry, that's the rules. And that's fair enough. It was a mistake on my part.
So had you driven a million miles again to get there, Cam?
Oh, I'd driven 6 hours or so, yeah.
Wow.
It's actually not a bad...
It wasn't the best news, but we ended up making a pretty good trip out of it. We ended up just driving for a couple more hours up here to Ohio, where I'm playing my US Open qualifier at, and saw the courses that we're going to be playing those qualifying tournament at. And I felt like it actually ended up being pretty productive, because I wasn't going to get a practice round in otherwise. It's much better turning up to those courses having seen them before, rather than turning up on Monday on a golf course you've never seen before, knowing that two good rounds gets you into the US Open. So I feel like it's actually worked out pretty well since then.
Well, I guess you don't want to make a habit of it, but it's not a bad precedent given Cam Smith rolled up to a tour school a day late, so he's bounced back okay, and I'm sure you'll do the same. I just want to ask you, you've had a great team together as an amateur, Kaan Pullen, your coach, Dean Kinney from Golf New South Wales, Matt Green, Andrew Shuden, who you've referred to as your caddy, who's many people would know as a tour player. Tell us about the team you've got around you, and also you had Kaan over there with you, I think, 2 weeks ago, and obviously that's played a part in your success last week.
No, well, the whole team's been there. Andrew's obviously been a pretty recent sort of addition to the team, but he's been a major role over the last year or so since we started working together, because initially I was doing all that sort of stuff myself, walking courses, learning everything, checking yardages, all that sort of stuff. And Andrew's completely got it covered, and it's a massive help. And now I can't really see myself playing tournament golf without him by my side, because we've made such a good team. But everyone in my team, from Golf New South Wales and Golf Australia, this has been a process in the making over the last few years, really, since I got into the program. And stuck with the processes and stuck with the people that have helped me from the beginning. And we've kind of hoped that it would eventually lead to getting into a good position like this, but it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of the right people and a lot of really good people helping me along the way. So there's a whole bunch of people to thank, and they all know who they are. They all know how they've contributed to getting us this far, and we're going to continue working together. And we've obviously got some sort of process that leads to winning tournaments. So I wouldn't mind doing it more often.
And, we wouldn't mind interviewing you after them either. Cam, I'm going to have to give you some interview techniques about talking up your caddies so passionately. The price Andrew Shuden's going to absolutely nail you to the wall next time he comes and figures out a percentage for you here. You've just given him something he cannot hold. He can't do anything but hold against you.
Oh, well, he's a good guy.
He is a good bloke.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, Andrew Shuden's a great bloke. And for those who have watched Australia in particular, but he's played elsewhere, but Australian tour events in the last 20 years, one of the great blokes and a really nice guy. He's got the great experience caddying up in Korea, I believe, on the women's tour. And, you know, he's turned his hand. He's a dab hand, Matty, isn't he, from, you know, playing ranks right through to the caddy ranks. It's an important thing, especially, you know, when, as Cam has said, he's discovering courses, you know, first up so many times at the moment.
I think something Andrew is going to bring to Cam as well is just to make him feel comfortable, make him feel at ease, and just keep him happy. And that's a massive role of a caddy. It's not just numbers.
You're perfectly right. And Cam, speaking of happy, you've been based in Sydney, obviously, your life, but at the moment you're making a home in Seattle. How's that working out for you?
It's been fantastic. I love being up there. I'm obviously very much enjoying spending my time with my girlfriend up there and having a place to call home. Having somewhere to call home over in America, since I'm spending so much time here, is a massive deal for me. I love having somewhere to get away from the tour life a little bit and have a whole bunch of people that I know, and I just feel very comfortable up there now. Got a great place to go and practice that up at Sahali there, and I've got a really good base there now. So
that's awesome.
You know, I'm probably going to be back there in about a week or so, which will be nice. It's been about a month since I was last there, but
and with
yeah,
you know,
I really love being there. Yeah.
With 80 or 90% of both tours' events probably in the southeast corner, and you being tucked up in the northwest corner, how's the frequent flyer balance?
It's not too bad. I mean, it's better than living in Sydney and going and playing those ones. So.
That's a good point. Well, Cam, yeah. Mate, honestly, the whole country was chuffed when they woke up on Monday morning, our time, of course, and saw you make the charge, as Matty said, up into the top 25, comfortably in the top 25 on the web.com tour money list, the all-important top 25. But most importantly, because we need to, and Matty and I might talk about this in a minute when we let you go, but it's really important that you found this winning groove, and I couldn't be happier for you. Such a nice guy, and we really appreciate you picking up the phone to us in a really important week, and all the best for what's going to be a big couple of months.
Anyways, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, how nice is it, Matt, to have a guy playing one of the biggest tournaments of his life join us in the middle of that week, especially on, you know, on the back of such great news. And he's a little bit shy character, Cam, so now that he's gone, I believe you've got some amazing stats to regale us with.
Yeah, well, I just want to let everyone listening know that Cam is really good, and that's not just a gut feel. I mean, he is really good based on that feel. But the world golf ranking stats 4 years ago, when he was an amateur at the end of the year, Hazy, he was ranked 1,711. Now, as an amateur, you're probably going to be around there. He came down a year later to 1,241, and then after his first year as a pro, he was 215, and now he currently sits at 105 on the world ranking. So 18 months into his pro career, he's already looking at that top 100. And who knows, if he makes the cut this week at Memorial, he might break through.
Which is staggering on so many levels, but not least of which is the fact that he hasn't had a tour to call home until this very week.
No, and I think one of the things we look at in the high-performance area is players that take their opportunities and take advantage of those. Cameron Smith has been someone that's really done that, and we know his pathway. Minji Lee and Hannah Green have really done it on the women's tour. So too has Su Oh, albeit a different route. He's tracking really quickly. He's looking at that top 100 inside 18 months. And Cameron Smith, as an example, took two and a half years to get there.
Wow. And as you say, I mean, he was with a bullet in everyone else's eyes. That was with a bullet, wasn't it, on the back of, you know, the US Open charge and those sort of things, and obviously his subsequent win. But that's an amazing statistic to think that he could potentially get there a year ahead of Cam, the other Cam.
Absolutely, and as you say, without a real tour to play on. But one thing it might be worth us investigating in the future on Inside the Ropes is the high-performance team.
This is what we've got you on. This is magnificent stuff here you're bringing to the table.
Well, I'd like people to know that this isn't my real job, because it's clearly not. We've done some statistical work on how long it takes male players from Australia, and we've done the female equivalent, but with Cameron Davis, it's not as relevant in this topic. How long it takes to get to the top 500, 400, and so on through to the top 100. We talked about Cam knocking on the door inside 18 months, Cam Smith doing it quickly. The average time it takes an Australian male player is over 6 years. So that gives you an indication of how well they're moving.
So that's 6 years, if you make it. So that doesn't take into account, you know, if I turned pro and was a chopper and I don't make it, it doesn't take me into consideration.
No, it's only the players that have made it. So the players that are inside the top 100 or have ever been there.
Okay, so, you know, Marcus Fraser,
yep,
right up to Jason Day, all, yep, those sort of guys, Scott Hend, have all figured into that. What did you say it was?
6.21 years to reach the top 100. And we've done a comparison with players from the United States, and they're right on with us, 6.22 years. But interestingly enough, it's the English players at 4.95 years to get to that top 100. One of the factors there we think is the European Tour. They get access to that European Tour, which carries a lot of ranking points early. But then going forward, top 50, top 25, we don't think it would be as accurate.
So looking, I'm just looking across the studio at the page with some dazzling colours on it from you. And the good colours are the green colours, and Australia leads the way early on, like in the calculation. So as players get into the top 500 and 400, Australia is leading the way. Why is that?
My personal opinion is that we give our amateurs professional tournament access early.
So our PGA Tour of Australasia is awesome in giving them access to tournaments that help them help their rankings.
Absolutely. And the PGA Tour and the ALPG, from a women's perspective, are fantastic with our young amateurs and giving them access to compete against the pros, compete on professional tournament setups, and in turn make them feel more comfortable as they go further through their careers. And it does carry on to the top 400. We lead the way there as well.
So the 500 and 400, Australia's in front. Then it clicks over to England from the 300, 200 and 100. The common thread there from what you've said is you suspect that it's tour access.
Yeah, that's my my suspicion. We've only just released this information ourselves, or just been privy to it ourselves. Our research team's been looking into this for some time. But I believe that's one of the main factors. And the fact that the US players take the longest, I think, has a lot to do with the fact that their players go down the college path.
Mm. It's fascinating. I mean, and presumably it helps you guys push the high-performance athletes, male and female, into direction that'll take them where they want to go quicker.
Absolutely, and it also helps you work out who's tracking in the right direction and who's maybe stagnating.
Well, Andy, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll cross back to you. I'll give the reins back to you in a second. This is Matty's been banging down my door to do this, so you know this is what he's bringing to the table. This is sort of like an ambit claim for him to have a regular spot, I reckon. So I'll get your opinion on that when we come back on the other side of this break. Thanks very much, Matty.
Thanks, Azzy.
The Golf Australia website is now the place to go to look up your handicap and so much more. Whether you're out and about on your phone or in the office trying to avoid work, just go to golf.org.au and punch your golf link number into the box at the top of the homepage. Who knows? Maybe that last round was just good enough to put you in single figures. While you're on the site, check out the daily golf results at your club, view our course index for up-to-date ratings, read the latest golf news from home and abroad, listen to Australian golf podcasts and interviews, and watch video tournament highlights or tips to improve your game. It's everything a golf tragic could want. Visit golf.org.au today, the home of Australian golf.
G'day guys, this is Jared Lyle. As you all know, I've got a bit of time up my sleeve lately, and I kill it by listening to Inside the Ropes to get all my golf news from around the world.
Welcome back to the show. We've been spending a bit of time chatting on Inside the Ropes about diversity, inclusion, you know, gender equality, particularly in golf. And probably a couple of months ago now, Hazy, we talked about the Vision 2025 policy that had been established by Golf Australia, which, Joe, in conjunction with a whole lot of other stuff happening with, you know, more not equally proactive gender policy initiatives that have been taking place in golf, are hopefully going to flag, you know, a new direction and a new look for what the game actually represents.
Well, that's right. I think the 2025 vision really, really excites me. I think it's about culture, it's about leadership, it's about how we as an industry do that, and it's about empowering our clubs. And this equal opportunity document is that. It's a practical guideline that our clubs can start the conversation now about some really tangible and relevant issues in society and an expectation of the next generations coming through about what we want.
And despite the number of women that golf clubs have been welcoming through the door to pay their membership fees, I don't know necessarily whether golf's been doing enough in the space to make it a fair and level environment over the decades.
Yeah, statistically, back in the 70s, women's participation sat at about 34%. It's now sitting at around about 20%. So in that time, clearly our product offering has not been desirable, and we need to do something quickly about it to amend that. And this is part of that, and the Vision 2025 is also an integral part of it.
So to that end, and as part of it all, Kristen Hilton is the Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner for Victoria, and I'm sure has a myriad of spaces that she keeps her eye on, and hopefully sport is one of those. Welcome to Inside the Ropes, Kristen. Great to have you here.
Thanks very much, Andy.
This is an area that the three of us and everybody involved in this podcast is we're committed to it to various degrees, but we're all committed to it as best as we possibly can be. Through your experience and observation since you've been in the chair, which is nearly 2 years now, those 2 years have gone quickly, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Sport and golf, how can your office use what these environments can bring to the table for you?
So it's a really good question, and I think one of the reasons why we're so excited to work with sports organisations, Golf Victoria, Golf Australia, is because we see sport as being something that sort of speaks a common language, if you like, to everybody. So part of our mandate at the Commission is trying to make Victoria a fairer, more inclusive and more equal society. And we do that through a number of ways. So we do it through if people have a particular complaint, so it might be individual treatment that they've received, which is unfair or discriminatory, and they can bring complaints to our service. Or it might be working with organisations to try and bring about systemic change, like, for example, Golf Victoria. And sport has, as I said, it has that common language, or there's a common denominator. It's not just about physical participation. It also gives you that sense of community. And at the end of the day, when you think about what the spirit of inclusion and equality and not being subject to unfair treatment is all about, it's about a sense of belonging. And it's about how you participate in your community, how you feel valued, and how you feel respected.
Why would anyone be resistant to any of that?
The resistance, I think, comes from the fact that sometimes it involves change. So you can talk about that at a pretty high aspirational level, and it's hard for people to disagree with. But when it actually comes to disrupting maybe the way things are, the status quo or power structures or entitlements that people have received for a long time, that's where you get a lot of resistance. So to take it sort of outside the sporting environment for a moment, we do a lot of work with Victoria Police, for example. Mm. We've been working them with for about 2 years about how their force can be more inclusive and gender equitable. And there's a lot of people that really want to see that change. And then there's people that resist it because they fear what they might lose when the change happens. And I think that's sometimes what we see in sport as well. You know, we can all say, yeah, we agree that everyone should be respected and treated equally, and sports clubs should be welcoming to everyone. But sometimes when the rubber hits the road, our own fear, our own prejudice, or our own sense of that's not the world that I'm used to comes into play.
So people don't want their empires to crumble before their eyes.
I think there's a bit of that. And I think there's, you know, certainly there's some power plays at hand. And then there's also, it's trying to bring people along with what a different vision of the world looks like. And that can take some time, I think.
So in golf, where we've got, I think the average age, correct me if I'm wrong, Hazy, is 63. Mm-hmm. So we could presume that in most club land, that the decision makers are sitting in that sort of ilk. How long do you think these practical guidelines may take to actually embed in constitutions and club land?
So I spoke at a launch for our Equal Opportunity Guideline a few months ago. I'm going to get the name of the golf course wrong in a moment.
Huntingdale,
that's right. I knew it started with H. And it was a breakfast session, and there was an audience of about, I don't know, 300 people. And it was one of the most engaged audiences I've spoken to in a long time. And I think that people are really interested in this, not just from a social or moral perspective that it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the future of their sport.
Mm, absolutely.
So, you know, Joe, you talked about in the 70s, 34% of female participation. It's dropped to about 20. The sustainability of your sport is under threat unless you attract and include a different audience. And you're only going to attract and encourage that audience if you make some structural changes to the way in which the game is played. So one of the things that we've sort of spoken to people about is during that time, so from the 70s to 2018, there's far more women in the workforce. So women no longer just want to play on weekdays. They want to play on the weekends and in weekend competitions. And the competitions haven't really changed to meet the way in which society has evolved.
So I spoke to the lovely Sarah Bertino in our office before I came down to talk with you, Kristen. And she mentioned some of the clubs, I guess, technically have opened their books on a Saturday to let women play. And everything's technical. It's been done on a... We've done this sort of a
yeah.
level.
Mm-hmm.
But what hasn't changed in her eyes, as someone that she observed very recently, was the welcoming nature of the men around and other people, managers, et cetera, around the club, the staff, were not great on Saturday. And even though the women were entitled to play and did in fact play, they weren't welcome and they didn't want to come back.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And it's like, you know, we've ticked that box in terms of giving equal access. But it's not just about that. It's about, you know, your change in attitude and actually making people not feel like they're somehow second class golf players because of their gender. So the attitudinal shift, I think, still has a ways to go. And so I think sort of part of it is like, sorry, Andy, to cut you off.
No, not at all.
Sometimes, you know, you can have policies and... But it's also about, and part of the Equal Opportunity Guideline or the information is about saying, yeah, these are some good policies that are going to help you comply with your obligations. But it's also that behavioural change and recognising what women will bring to the sport. Like you look at AFLW, how much energy has that injected into that game?
Oh, massive. But even they've hit some roadblocks in the last sort of 6 months that really need some action to resolve. And I don't know whether you can, in that particular case, I don't think you can let the clubs deal with it themselves. I think that needed some intervention from headquarters to do something about it. Hopefully they will down the track. Otherwise, there'll be no growth in female coaches. And it was leading me to my next question. If there is inaction and if clubs don't take this seriously and make real changes, what can be done about that?
So you can, if they're not making changes and if the policies that they currently have discriminate against women, then you can make complaints. And we have...
Would that be to your office?
That would be to our office. Yep. And that's a free complaint service. And so just sort of for the listeners' benefit, the Equal Opportunity Act, which is the law around discrimination in this state, applies to sporting clubs. Because they're delivering a service, because they have club membership and a range of other things. So they've got to comply with the legislation. And if they don't, then people can make a complaint. We will try and resolve it. And there can be a bunch of ways in which you can resolve it, which is like changing your training or changing your policy, or sometimes it involves financial compensation as well. So it's the individual complaints, and then sometimes when you get enough of those individual complaints, which is actually what's happened in this case, you go, oh, there's actually a systemic issue here, and we need to tackle this in a number of different ways. And look, we've had such positive response and engagement working with Golf Victoria. We've also worked with Lawn Bowls, which is another, has very similar, different, but sort of similar issues to Golf Victoria as well. So I think that a lot of sporting clubs are realising that this is not just a legal, social, ethical thing. It's also a financial sustainability and really important for the sport and its and people's participation in it generally.
To anyone's knowledge, are there any states, you know, we are recording the show out of Melbourne, but we're listened to nationally. Are there any states, anyone know, are there any states who do this a bit better than any others? Is there a standard bearer for this in Australia, do you think?
I think, if I'm right, I believe that Golf Victoria have kick-started this process and we're now looking at federal legislation, but there's differences in state legislation and federal legislation. So there's a bit of a, obviously you're the expert in the field and I won't step on your toes. But yeah, I think there's a lot of work to be done to roll this out now on a federal level. But also this morning, the RNA have enacted their women's golf charter, is that what it was called?
Yeah. Women in Golf Charter.
And so we're going to probably see this on a global scale soon. So it started from a very small part of the world, downtown Melbourne in Australia.
Which is great. And when you get the R&A brand sort of, you know, stamping itself on a matter like this, then hopefully it starts to get the kind of, you know, significance and be taken seriously the way it should.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier when we opened the show, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, Kristen, like this charter in particular and the Vision 25 ties people to actions. And I would imagine that you were going to tell me that it is time for action and not just words.
Yes, I am. I think that's absolutely right. Like, you know, and sometimes you start with some aspirational statements, but they do have to be followed up with really clear actions and strategies about how you're going to address things. So it might be, how are we going to change the facilities so they're more welcoming to women and girls? What are the targets that we're going to set for women on boards, for example, around our sporting clubs? Or how are we going to ensure that women can have access to full membership and not just associate membership? And I think unless you, and it might be that you have different strategies or targets for each club that sort of fit in with a broader scheme. But I think unless you hold yourself and your organisations to account, it's hard to see your progress. And I think that's also really encouraging for people to say, we started here and look what we've been trying to do over the last 5 years. And in fact, we've got all of these women and girls now involved in our sport and they're loving it. So I think it's really important, not just to hold yourself to account, but to measure how far you've come.
You brought up a really good point there, that it's not just playing and memberships and that sort of side of things. It is board level and many institutions. I was talking to someone else who was telling me that women are precluded from having a 7-day membership in this particular club, but by the same club's constitution, you have to be a 7-day member to be a board member. Mm. So it's systematically ruling women out of holding a position like that. I'm imagining that rules like that are now completely offside.
Well, that sort of example, I would suggest, is against the legislation and it's discriminatory. You'd sort of need to know the details, but it still goes on. So I've heard those recent examples as well.
But it's time to act on that, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing is, I think, unless you have, if you're really keen on increasing women and girls' participation in sport, then you actually need women and girls helping you to come up with the strategies that are going to include them. So that means having women as decision makers at board level, having more female coaches. I think there's only 5% of golf coaches are women, or accredited coaches are women across Australia. So you need to increase the visibility of women in those kind of more authoritative positions.
And I think as Golf Australia, soon to be under One Golf, I think we play our part there too in making sure that we foster. It's easy for me to say as a young female, but that we foster more female leadership, obviously from our board level, and I think we tick that box quite well, both at Victoria and Golf Australia, but we need to make sure that we lead by example.
You're the exception to the rule, though, Jo. I mean, it's easy for you not to see that because that's your life, but there's so many other young women who aren't in your position because they've been put off. And they maybe wanted to once swing a club. They watched Kari Webb when they were 14 or 15, but haven't been able to get through the doors of a club and feel welcome. And I think that's the crucial thing that we're all hell-bent on resolving.
And this comes back to this reality that, you know, a lot of people will be listening to this show via a podcast. There'll be some people driving to a golf course listening to the radio version on a Saturday morning, and they have got their regulation time slot every single week. They play with the same two or three blokes every single week. They've got the same seats in the bar every single week. The last thing they want is to go and book in a fortnight's time and see that Sue, Helen, and Jenny have got their time slot. And so to that man... What do we say? I mean...
Well, and that's what we were talking about, where it's hard to disagree with a statement which is we want to make our sport more inclusive, but when it actually comes down to your experience and it might change, then that's where it becomes, I think, a little bit tougher. And everyone reacts to it in a personal way.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so it's all about... you know, your personal history, your personal background, how you participate in the sport, and what's going to change for me.
Yep.
So I think it is about having conversations at that club level about why it's really great to have women and girls involved in the sport. And also trying, I mean, at the moment it's a gender issue. You want to get to a point where a club doesn't really distinguish around whether it's female players or male players because they're all golf players and love the sport. But before we get to that point, we need to make some corrections along the way because we have not done a good enough job to promote women and girls in golf.
You know what? Oh, sorry, Jack.
I was going to say, if we were to design a golf club here in this little hub today, we would have a member, not a male member and a female member.
Exactly right.
We would remember, we're a golfer.
Yep.
And but you're right, we've got, in some cases, you know, more than 100 years of history that we've got to educate in some way. But I think that, in essence, the health of the game and female participation are very much intertwined, and it's a great opportunity for our sport to actually address this now.
I can't wait to go and play a Saturday morning, and I'll often, spur of the moment, you know, I've got a Saturday off, I can play, I haven't planned anything, I'll just go and find a spot in the field somewhere and stick my name down. I can't wait to rock up on Saturday morning and play with a couple of women I've never met at the club before and sit around and golf with them. Like, it's... The day that happens will be a great day.
Yeah.
The first day it happened for me at my club, Clates, Sue and I booked the first tee time off the first tee and we heads turned, like literally all day. And we just sat there and just gave them a gentle wave. And,
and did you sense any kind of...
Oh, yeah, most certainly. But that's changing now and it's becoming the norm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've lived and breathed it.
Kristen, you got a lot on your plate, but can we make a date in a year's time? Can you come back and tell us how we're going in this space, particularly from a golf perspective? We're all enthusiasts and we'd like to think the best of the sport. We might give you a couple of weeks' notice and you can do some digging into how golf's going. I'm sure at some stage it'll sort of pop up across your desk anyway and amongst all the other matters that are...
I would love to do that and also hear from people for whom the experience has changed in the last year. You know, if there are things that are happening at clubs where it's meant that women and girls are playing the sport, or, you know, the rules have changed and it's benefited everyone. I think they're really great stories to tell too.
Let's hope there's a lot of good ones to tell. Keep up the good work.
Thanks,
Make
Andy.
Sure you get occasional good night's sleep. And thanks for coming in and
thanks
spending some time
Thanks very much for having
us.
Me.
Kristen Hilton, Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner in Victoria. It's a really big deal and hopefully it doesn't fall on deaf ears when we're having a chat about it. We'll get a break out of the way here on Inside the Ropes. Come back to wrap up the show after this.
Hi, this is Sherelle McMahon. Swing Fit is the fun, healthy, social way for women to get started in golf. You'll learn the basics of the golf swing and how to putt over a six-week program and get your whole body moving through yoga and Pilates-style exercises. You don't need any golf knowledge or equipment. Simply turn up in comfy clothing and get started. You'll be surrounded by like-minded people and receive constant support. So get outdoors, meet new friends and learn a sport that you can play for the rest of your life. To find a program near you, visit swingfit.com.au.
G'day guys, it's Brian Russell here, and I'm a long way from home, playing on the Latin America tour and living in the US, but I keep up with all my Australian golf by listening Inside the Ropes.
Welcome back to the show, not too far away from wrapping up, but you, Hazy, along with, was it just you and part of a global audience?
An Australian audience. Of journalists this morning through the great endeavours of the Australian PGA, were able to speak to Ernie Els, who's been a long-time favourite of mine. Don't mind admitting that, Andy.
No, he's a favourite of many of us, I think.
Yeah, and we were talking to him primarily, well, the tenet of it was he's agreed to play the Fiji International. So
brilliant.
Just continuing on, which is part of one of these questions that we asked him. He's a globetrotter, and he was once a magnificent two tour player. You know, he split his time between Europe and the US. Now more of a US based player, but he's still a global traveler. And his influence as the President's Cup captain at Royal Melbourne in 2019 is going to be strong and loud and proud. He's already changed the way the teams are selected to try and give the internationals a voice against the Americans. And long may that continue. And that's one of the questions I asked him, Andy, was how about putting the W back into the World Golf Championships?
You know, that's been our discussion, our debate's been with the tour for a long time to move these World Championship events around the world, you know, the way, the name suggests, you know, it's a World Golf Championship. And, the Australian PGA, you guys are involved with this. The South Africans are involved. You know, the whole world's involved with this event, but it seems like they don't quite get to be played internationally, except for the one in China. So that would be another debate, you know, going into the future. Obviously, I don't know how much weight I can bring to the table as a President's Cup captain, but I would surely keep hammering the nail, so to speak, because I'm with you. You know, I feel these events are special events, and the world is being starved, really, by the world players playing these events, but these events keep on being held in the U.S. or close to the U.S., so it'd be unbelievable if one of those events can go down to Australia or South Africa or South America, for that matter. So I'm with you on that one.
So great to hear him being so enthusiastic about that. Now, this is not just lip service that somebody like Els is paying to the notion of a World Golf Championship. This is a man who's lived the commitment to taking his talents all over the world. And if only there were some other people in high places with golf clubs in their hand and with, you know, chairs on influential tables,
yeah,
who were taking notice of people like Els.
Exactly, and he was party to something that happened in 2011. It was going to be a WGC event, a separate one in South Africa. I think it was going to be called the Peace Open or the Love Open or, you know, something along those lines. And it was all song and dance at the 2011 Masters when it was announced. Fizzled a little bit in 2012, died in 2013, never played.
Yeah, right.
And he's sick of it.
Okay.
And, you know, he talked, as you heard him say there, about, you know, South America and Australia and South Africa just being basically off the grid, and he's desperate to do something about it. Well, not desperate, but he'd be eager to help if he can.
Matter number two before you and your colleagues and Ernie.
Which was another really interesting thing, because we've spoken long and at great length about Adam Scott's fortunes on this show in the past few weeks, and how he's gone, and there's been troughs and peaks and everything else in between. But the one man who's much closer to the situation than us, Andy, is, of course, Ernie Els.
Scotty, I've been watching him. We played a practice round together a couple of weeks ago in Dallas. You know, he's striking the ball unbelievably. He had difficulty with the short putter. He's just not very comfortable with that. He's gone back to the long putter. He looked much more comfortable. You know, if when Scotty gets comfortable on the greens and he starts holding some, you're really going to see him back to his best. You know, he's hitting the ball as good as ever. His motivation is there. He's playing a lot more. So that shows me that he really wants to get back to form, at least into the top 50. I mean, he's a top 20 player. You know, he's got so much talent. And then with the family thing, you know, we all, you know, it's difficult. You know, we come from the Southern Hemisphere. You know, you guys from Aussie, we from South Africa, and immediate family behind and go abroad and basically put your flag in another country, and whether that's in the U.S., Europe, Bahamas, you know, in this case, you know, you're away from your people, so you have to make a new life yourself, and that's exciting, but it's also demanding. Scotty's been trying to spend a lot of time in Australia. The birth of the second kid was down there, and you know, he's back and forth a little bit. So I think he's getting a new plan going, and when he gets that settled, I think that'll also make it a lot easier for him to start performing on the golf course. But he's just about there, you know, with his whole private life and on the golf course. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Scotty coming through shortly.
So, Joe, that listening to Ernie talk about the way Scotty's got his life away from the golf course kind of in a bit more balance, a bit like what we were saying about Cam Davis earlier, just having somebody who can smooth the seas a little bit for you from time to time. Maybe those of us who were worrying whether Scotty's best might be behind him, maybe we just need to park those fears just for the time being.
We just need to maybe just give him time. He's got priorities. He's got family. And we've got to respect that. He's only human. And, yeah, with a bit of time, it's a game that we can play for life. And no doubt, with a bit of time, we'll see lots of him.
So one more game that's played for life is obviously the Champions Tour now on the USPGA Tour. Uh-huh. The names Langer and McCarron, of course, came up with Scott alongside the long putter conversation with Ernie Els, who himself was a former exponent of the belly putter. He's got some very strong words to say, Andy, to the game's governing bodies about how the rules should be written around the putting technique.
The way that they went about changing this rule is really appalling. I mean, you know, I was using the anchored way, you know, in my belly. Keegan Bradley, I mean, Cole Pedersen, Tommy Clark. I mean, there's so many of us that used that method. You know, when we won some majors, we won some big events, it seems like, you know, it was a taboo way. They wrote it, you know, it's amazing how they changed the rule, but it's not really changed. You know, it's just a, as you say, if it's a millimeter from you, you can use it. And that's within the rules, again, you know. So you shouldn't take it to the player. You should go to the RNA and USGA, where they write these things, you know, and wait till the new rules come out. There's going to be some controversy there too. So, it, you know, if you want to take away the anchored method, then write a rule, like you just said, that it's got to be the shortest part of a club in the bag. It's got to be shorter than your sand iron or your driver or whatever the case may be, and get on with it, you know, because then nobody's going to go back to that method. But until that is not written in print in the rules, then, you know, guys can go back to that method and just keep it away from their chest a little bit. So, again, they're within the rules. Whether you think it's controversial or not, you know, Adam Scott, Scott McCadden, and these guys going back to this method, you know, they're within the rules of the game. So there's no argument there.
Hallelujah, Ernie. I think we're all, anyone sitting around here is in a court. Just Joe, I know you want to talk about the US Women's Open, but just trying to think, I can't think of any female player in Europe or America. Certainly here in Australia, there aren't many professional women using the long putter.
No, I actually can't think off the top of my head. But we're saying, obviously, with the rules of golf changing, it'll be nice to see that the caddy has less part to play in the target of the free shot routine.
Maybe it's something to do, Andy, with what you were talking about before earlier about the life cycle of women professionals, and you know that it might be shorter than the average man's, that they don't go through the crisis of confidence by age 30 when some seem to disappear off the you know the main stage. Maybe it is they just have greater confidence in their hands and have done it at a young age. I don't know.
And when you speak broadly to people that love golf watchers, they admire women for their short games.
Oh yeah.
So their strength really lies in that. And I think you've hit it on the head there, Hazy, when you talk about that crisis mode. There's a level of confidence in their own ability around the greens.
Mm.
US Open Women's, what should we be looking forward to, do you think?
Well, we're off to Sweet Home, Alabama this week to Shoal Creek. It's been very wet from what I've heard. Suo, who I've been speaking to, has hardly got out on the course. There's been a subtropical sort of storm that's coming from Mexico. And players are talking about maybe that there's going to be preferred lies for the first time in a US Open.
Really?
But yeah, just watch this space.
Yeah.
We've got six Aussies, young amateur Robin Choi's back in the mix. So second US Open that she's qualified for. She won her local qualifier up in Colorado, which was terrific, by four shots. We've also got Kempe, who you had a few weeks ago. Kari Webb's now got a special exemption at Minji Lee, Suo, and I'm missing one other.
Sarah Jane Smith
would be the round out. So lots of Aussies
in
condition.
Not there?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I've missed another one. Yeah, Catherine Kirk will be in the mix. Greeny's not in the mix this week. So
okay.
A couple of Aussies obviously in Suo and in Minji, firing some form late. But I think it's going to be someone that's going to have to be really aggressive and accurate off the tee. There's obviously with the rain, it's going to play extra long. And having looked at the course, lots of intimidating trees sort of encroaching on the fairway. So,
I mean, that's kind of appropriate given the fact that we've been spending a lot of time talking about equality on the show today. It's right that we should be talking about a golf tournament in Alabama.
Very true. Right? That's very true.
Yeah.
You couldn't have said
nice
that
correlation.
I would just wish Joe had sung that and really joined me.
Would you mind, Joe?
I would not do that to you all.
Will you sing, you sing Happy Birthday to Clats for us?
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
That's enough. Yes,
I know when you're listening to it, but as we record, it is getting on in the birthday of my client Hazy. Play like a pro. Can you tell me a bit about play like a pro, please?
I'll do my best, Andy. For the second successive year, we're offering golfers around Australia the chance to win the experience of a lifetime and do exactly what you just said, play like a pro at the Australian Open. And we're rapidly moving towards the start of that qualification period. In fact, it might have started depending on when you're listening to this. Mm-hmm. We start on June 1. So we're keen to share everything through our websites and social channels. We've got 4 promotional videos. There's all sorts of things going on where you can check it out at golf.org.au/play9, the numeral 9. golf.org.au/play9. And just get on there and register your interest, because we'd love to see you at the Lakes come November this year. It's an opportunity that's almost too good to be true.
Absolutely it is. That's a great opportunity. Just a reminder, in case you are a first-time listener or a regular that hasn't done it, you can subscribe to the various providers of your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get them from. We want to hear your feedback, particularly on Kristen Hilton's appearance this week.
Yeah.
Somehow I suspect we're not going to need to ask for that. I would think that that's such a touch point in established male-dominated sports. When you hear a conversation like that, that'll challenge the way a lot of men think about their place at their golf club. If you've got a view that you want to share with us, we would love to get your thoughts on that. Send it through to inside_the_ropes. And if you're too old to know what that means, ask one of your grandkids what Twitter's all about, and they'll help you compose something to us.
I've got one bit of political news, Andy, that I'm seeing we're just wrapping up the politics side of the game. Is Golf Queensland voted unanimously this week to join One Golf.
Great.
Which is another big step forward for golf in this country.
Great.
Big thanks to David Brett and all the crew, Peter Castrisos, and everyone who's worked so hard up there in Queensland to get that over the line, joining Tasmania and the Northern Territory on board, South Australia and Victoria progressing nicely, and hopefully by maybe in 2 or 3 months' time, there's no set timeline at the moment, but we'll have 5 states and territories on board and rolling with the future of Australian golf.
Brilliant. When you get around, that's great. That's really important. We should mention the 5-star ratings. You like doing this?
I do, but I actually haven't got the paperwork with me.
Well, that's disappointing.
Sorry.
I think it's Elliot Jurd. This is a demarcation issue which has to sort out after the show. Yeah. This is generally Hazy's domain, reading this sort of stuff out, particularly when there's nice things said about him, Joe. He always seems to find a way to read these things out. Great to be able to keep up to date with what's happening in Australian golf and with Aussies around the world on a weekly basis. That's coming from Elliot, and along with a 5-star rating. Now, it's great if you could do that. If you do it, don't ask me why. We say this every week, but if you do leave a rating and it has 5 stars, it makes the show easier for people to find. Don't ask me how this stuff works.
You're a master of algorithms, aren't you? Joe, what about you?
Oh, no.
You were bragging how young you were before as you looked over the table to Hazy and I. There was something very pointed about the way you said that before, which really
red.
Hurt
Thanks,
my,
Murray.
Really hurt my feelings, Joe. Have you got any advice for him?
For next week.
Well, he
for
won't
the big
be
day.
Here next week.
I know.
He's getting married, the big fella.
Congrats,
finally.
Hazy.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Andy.
Good luck, Hazy. All the very best.
I'm sorry that Angela is committed to a life of bad jokes and bad singing, but I'm absolutely thrilled to marry my fiancée, Angela, in Hawaii next week.
And you'll be away for a few weeks thereafter.
I will. So I'll be back probably first up in July, fresh and raring to go with a ring on the finger.
Go and have a great time, and all the very best to the pair of you. And your extended families, I'm sure it'll be a delightful moment for everybody involved. And,
appreciate that.
The entire Inside the Ropes family sends our love to the pair of you, Hazy.
Thank you.
There you go. Mm-hmm. On that note, Joe?
It's a special time,
Hazy. Thanks. I'm blushing, Joe.
Be honest with me, how much will you judge him based on the quality of the
feathers?
Rock?
The real question is, are you going to shave the beard?
No, the beard's actually been requested by my bride-to-be.
Really?
So this is a very big turn-up for the books and helps everyone understand why she's such a special woman.
And very interesting that your departure has coincided with a serious downturn in the fortunes of your footy team. You are clearly leaving Australia secure in the knowledge that momentary belief that maybe Hawthorn could have produced something this year appears to be forlorn and over.
I've had a chat with Clarko. He said this will be my wedding present.
Okay. That's it. We are done. Joe, outstanding work by you.
Thanks for having me again, boys.
Thanks for Kristen. Thanks for Cam. Thanks for Ernie. Hazy, good to see you again, big fella.
Cheers, mate.
Have a great next month. We'll be back with some sort of cobbled together team next week for Inside the Ropes.